Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Criterion Sessions at One Heat Minute Productions. I'm your host, Blake Howard. We pop in with the Criterion Collections, with the Criterion Sessions, infrequently when new releases come out, when something really grabs us, when there's some either filmmaker or like great film writer that I know is a physical media collector and we need to talk about a certain thing. But this particular episode, my friend Craig Lindsay, aka Uncle Krizzle, was saying, Blake, I like those Criterion Session episodes. When are we going to do Criterion Sessions Black? The black movies that have been anointed and canonized by Criterion. And I said, man, you tell me when and we can make it happen. I then proceeded to delay this conversation many times because there's been 400 million things happening. But I'm glad that before the year is out, I get to talk to him. He's a talented writer. He writes locally in Texas, in Houston, where he lives, but also writes for the great Crooked Marquee, edited by our man, Jason Bailey. So, Craig, Uncle Krizzle, how are you, my friend?
I'm doing what I can. I mean, listen, I don't know how much of, the outside world you want revealed during this podcast, but we're recording this on December 3rd, which means we are 3 days into the month of December. And I don't know how it over there in Aussie land with all the great things, wonderful things you got over there, but over here, first off, I'm not a big fan of the month of December anyway, because it's like people can't wait to stop working. So,
I'm one of them.
Yeah, so like 3 days into December, people are already fucking up. I can't seem to get any my people on the phone or, you know, whatever they're all doing other things. And I'm just hanging by a goddamn thread. Just, the usual regular problems I have as a freelance critic and a person living in what I still believe is America. Let's see if we can do this. Let's see if something interesting comes from this, and it's not a waste of either of our times, but yeah, I'm gonna try to do something. So.
Well, I appreciate you trying. That's all I can expect. And I thought I was expecting something more like grandiose, that something could happen maybe I wasn't aware of in the news in your country, because it never surprises me day on day of what's happening. But yes, definitely people are going crazy in this, we call the silly season in Australia, because we have a bigger emphasis, I think, on like Christmas and leave. More so than you guys, because you only have like a short break, right? Like at Christmas, is there any kind of like, or do people take a chunk of time off usually?
Well, the holiday season, or as I now refer to it as Mariah season, is like it seems that people are, as I said, like people are kind of like can't wait to stop working and just be in this state of not doing anything. So it's like usually the last couple of weeks of December, that's when, you know, winter break, you know, going back to how I used to do things when I was in school. But it just seemed like, you know, the minute the Thanksgiving turkey shows up, people are just
checked
out, ready to,
yeah.
Yeah, they're just checked out. You're just trying to see, hey, this little stuff we got to talk about and deal with, and that's an issue.
All right, so we were talking about these amazing films and filmmakers, and you sort of prescribed to me just chatting what you see. If you don't own these, then you don't have black filmmakers on your shelves, essentially, if you're a collector. And some of that list were things like Love Jones, signifying works of Marlon Riggs, Menace to Society, maybe Malcolm X. I can't remember which spike you had. I think you definitely had Do the Right Thing was an essential one. You then had the, I think it was the Van Peebles box set. I can't remember what the name of that set is.
It's called Mario Van, Melvin
Van Peebles. Yeah.
Essential films.
The Wiz.
Yeah.
The Wiz. Yeah, I think it was on your list. Have I missed anything?
Well, okay. Well, I mean, there's one that's near and dear to my heart, which is Menace to Society.
Hell yeah.
Because I wrote the essay on which you have as well.
Yep.
You can't forget about Cooley High.
Cooley High.
Yeah.
How can I ask you, you've written a lot of places, you've had lots of bylines. How was that how was that getting the tap on the shoulder and getting asked to write for Menace to Society for Criterion?
I mean, it was a challenge. I remember Ashley Clark, we were talking, who's the the curator over at Criterion. I think we were, talking about, I just asked at one point, hey, when can a brother get in and do the essay for one of the films? This was right when the big New York Times story about Criterion not having enough films by black filmmakers as part of the collection, and Criterion immediately went to work on that, and they started acquiring a lot of films by black filmmakers after that. And I think, and that was kind of like one of the positives of that whole experience of bringing more awareness to black film, black filmmakers. And not only that, but also it was like a just covering many different facets of black film, whether it is an old 70s film like Cooley High or 90s hood movie like Menace to Society, or doing box sets on Melvin Van Peebles and Marlon Riggs. Marlon Riggs especially is like not a well-known filmmaker as Melvin Van Peebles, but his work, a lot of the films he's done, merit definitely some attention and notice. And so it was just great seeing all these different films become a part of the Criterion collection, and it's still going. A little house party they're showing, dropping the disc in January.
I gotta get my hands on House Party. Oh my god, even in Australia that was a huge VHS. Australians, especially my friends, we worshipped black culture's the coolest thing in the world, and we come from pretty boring white sports culture, so we love sport and things like that. But when it came to music, that had such a profound impact. And then there was that, I guess, probably perfect 90s period, because we've probably been a bit starved of it probably since the 70s, but that perfect 90s period where there was like an explosion of hip-hop, an explosion of these sort of films from young black filmmakers, and then a huge explosion of both serious and comedic black movies that came through, and then that just sort of led through into the 90s of like the explosion of the Wayanses and stuff like that. So, you know, other than Eddie in the 80s who came through and like crushed internationally and had a huge impact in all of those huge artists from the 80s, it was the films of those indies that had the next explosion really on our screens, and that really I feel resonated most with like basically everyone in my, you know, my generation, what is now technically the tail end of Gen X and the elder millennials, I think people call this.
Yes. Well, the thing that, like, as I mentioned before, just like the wide array of black films that they've brought into the collection, it also like opens up the conversation because especially it's something that made me quite aware, because, you know, the Criterion is like the, you know, kind of seen as kind of the gold standard of
it is, yeah,
what constitutes as great films, and with you officially bringing in like all these different films from black filmmakers, finally, you know, bringing awareness to that black, you know, films made by black filmmakers have, you know, whether it is, you know, whether it is a Shaft, because creating a Shaft or Hollywood Shuffle, or Bill Duke's Deep Cover.
Oh, great movie. That's another one I got on the shelf. Holy, what a movie.
Or Gina Prince, Bite Woods, Love and Basketball. It officially opens up the conversation that, oh, these films do have merit and do have value. They're not just for a particular audience. Earlier this year I'd interviewed Issa Rae, and like, you know, she's a big Love and Basketball fan. Just, you know, she's pissed off that the movie came out 25 years ago and makes her feel so old.
as everything does now these days, when you're like, I'm sure that movie was like, you know, 2-3 years ago, and someone's like, that was 15 years ago, and you're like, shit. Yeah. Okay.
I mean, like, when I actually, like, yeah, because it was, you know, for me, it's just like, you know, seeing all this stuff come out and seeing all this happen, and then write about, like, I've written about many of these releases for outlets, and just once again brings awareness to these films, and also it kind of bring about the conversation of the cinephiles or film snobs, the cineants, or whatever we call it, like, would they be interested in these films if they weren't Criterion releases? I mean, are they interested in them now that they're Criterion releases? Because, you know, just usually, you know, because you go about, you know, Criterion releases a lot of different films, but you know, because, like, one of the reasons I, you know, brought this into consideration is because I wanted to see, like, who had, like, who were the big Criterion heads that also had the black films, along with the essential Fellini, or, you know, the Ingmar Bergman's cinema set that came out. Just like, do you also have Claudine, which is another blaxploitation film that came out, that Criterion dropped? And so,
is that,
yeah,
hold up, that Claudine, is that Tony Stella did the artwork for that? That looks like it. Looks like it.
I'm trying to see.
I'm sure I'll find.
I think it might have been like on the actual movie poster for it. But just yeah, I just all these movies are coming out now, have came out, and I just was wanted, and also not to call you out for anything, but just like, usually I know there was somebody did something on the Wiz over the criteria session. So just like usually the black films aren't, maybe you can tell me like if I missed any conversations, but just as generally, those films aren't discussed.
What's up, y'all? Kelly Clarkson with Wayfair. My favorite thing about the holidays, decking out my whole house. It's not a competition, but if it was, well, I'd win the season with Wayfair. Outdoor inflatable Santa, got it on Wayfair. Trees, lights, and ornaments, Wayfair. Hosting must-haves like dining sets, beds, sheets, and towels, Wayfair. For everything in your style delivered with fast and free shipping, visit wayfair.com or the Wayfair app to win the season. But again, it's not a competition.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
It's a fair question, and I would just say only starting the Criterion sessions, and there's not many of the episodes that we've done so far because we sort of like kicked them off this year. It is still 2025, holy shit. So we kicked them off this year, but the big black film this year that came out was obviously, there's been a couple of big releases, with House Party coming up and things like that early next year, but got my hands on The Wiz, and for me, that was a film that was in circulation. It was on television and you could see it and was, pretty much a video store staple. But for me, like the proliferation of VHS, like I just from a percentage standpoint is like you could see everything. Like right now, it's actually the most exciting when like films by black filmmakers that are underseen or just films by any filmmakers that are underseen are curated into like beautiful box sets by some of these prestige labels. Because sometimes you just can't see them. Like, we can't walk. There's no video. There's not a single video store in Sydney anymore. There's not. Like, and even if you go to a commercial, we've got like a outlet store. I think you guys have got like Walmart or like Best Buy. Like, we've got a place called JB Hi-Fi, and you go down there, you ain't finding a Criterion Collection movie in there. You're finding a hell of a lot of commercial stuff, usually usually released in the last couple of years, no real special editions to speak of anything that gives you any kind of cultural context. And you can find a hell of a lot more like recent 4Ks of other crap rather than something like this. For me, like Menace to Society is other stuff that I've had conversations with my friend Alexi about because we're both pretty obsessed with it. Bill Duke's Deep Cover is a huge movie. I love him as a filmmaker. Bill Duke is like, Bill Duke not only as an actor, but as a filmmaker kind of like intersects my weird line of interest because he started directing episodes of Miami Vice and then eventually made Deep Cover. That was so hard to find that damn movie anywhere in Australia. And then seeing that it came out in Criterion, I readily imported it. And then you've got some of the others that seem more like universal, like compelling classics, like the Spike movies are all over there. Malcolm X and Do the Right Thing being like, pretty much undeniably one of the greatest movies of its decade and maybe of the century. So yeah, I'm always interested. And I think that they need the centering. I like when there's not this kind of like cineast, necessarily like a cineast kind of like snootiness. I like, with the Van Peebles set, for example, one I'm keen to get my hands on, but I just haven't gotten around to it, is like, you're pulling together a bunch of films from a filmmaker and you're kind of like showing their life's work. And like the signifying works of Marlon Riggs, which you recommended to me, was just so fascinating to see like such an unabashedly like queer man at the time that he's making these films, like having these really incisive, powerful documentaries or experimental films all in one set to kind of see the whole sequence of his art. I think that's what's the coolest thing about physical media just in general is like when you get a release and you get to contextualize that release, because like people talk about sometimes the frustration with like Rotten Tomatoes where you can see like a Rotten Tomatoes, review number or IMDb when people like rate the movie, that can change as cultural tastes change. but you don't often get to see like what people thought of the movie at the time that it was released and then compare it to now. And I think that that's what a lot of these releases do. So that's really cool. But yeah, no, I actually don't. I do own Deep Cover and I do own Menace Society, but I do not own the Essential Fellini thing. I don't own that right now. I don't own that. I might. It's just past Black Friday sales, which it wasn't very compelling to me. It wasn't as big a discount as I was expecting. But yeah, that's, you know, I think it's worth talking about, man. It's you're right to talk about it. You should center it. What are the movies, though? A quick question before we dive in, finally, like, sort of, you know, center our discussion on, like, these other films. And before I get a chance to talk to you about how much I just loved one of the recommendations, funnily enough, that Tracy Letts actually recommended in the Criterion Closet as well. But what are the big filmmakers for you, or big films that, like, should be on the radar for Criterion that you feel like need the canonization?
I don't know why Pootie Tang just came to mind.
I mean, that's a.
I think
Pootie Tang. Pootie Tang. I've owned since it came out. Just so you know, and watched it.
Yeah.
What a tang.
Yeah. Well, I mean, just I often, you know, on an unrelated note. Yeah, because I often feel like Criterion Collection should release some out there titles on April Fool's Day.
Yeah, that's a fun
and
one.
Just like just,
and
just
see if and see if it bites. See, put a fake like pre-order link, and see how many people click it, and then go, actually, this was an April Fool's, but we're gonna release it.
Yeah, like then one of the things would be like, you know, Boudin, or sort of comedies, like, you know, because I don't know, they're starting to become quite that's starting to become an area that they're not quite really figured, you know, with trying to round up comedies to include on the Criterion Collection. Like, I guess that's like the next thing. Like, people say, well, why aren't there more comedies in the Criterion Collection?
Well, I mean, if they've done Menace to Society, it feels like a beautiful pair for that would be Don't Be a Menace to South Central While You're Drinking Your Juice in the Hood. Like, they should have that movie.
That could have been like a, you know, a special feature in yeah. the this. Well, that, like, they're beginning to like a lot of movies I wanted to see on Criterion, they've already dropping it. I would love them to delve more into blaxploitation. I think,
yeah,
like I'm about to write about the soundtracks for Superfly and The Mac, and those Hell are yeah. two films that should definitely get some notice. I mean, they're very influential, you know, the direction and the soundtrack. I mean, Willie Hutch did The Mac, and Curtis Mayfield, of course, it's Superfly. Curtis Mayfield, one of the many, who's done many soundtracks for in the blaxploitation era, like Claudine. Mm. Like, he did the soundtrack for that. And so, they're kind of already picking up steam on, you know, what they're including. It's like thinking, you know, just thinking back. I mean, well, they released Boys in the Hood on Laserdisc back in the day. So I figured like that would be the next.
Yeah, that's got to happen.
Have that.
Mm-hmm. But it's what's weird is they did the amazing Taxi Driver that they did on Laserdisc with a Martin Scorsese commentary track is not in the collection anymore. It's been kind of like recaptured and hoarded by the studio who released it to release on physical media. And I actually am really lucky that I've got a couple of versions of Taxi Driver, but one of the ones that I have kept actually does have that Criterion commentary track from the original Laserdisc on it, because it becomes like this huge thing. So yeah, it feels like surely.
Well, I mean, because also Criterion, they dropped a lot of big films on Laserdisc, and when the DVD boom happened, a lot of studios
took their stuff back. Yeah,
yeah, and just, you know, So there's a Ghostbusters criterion. I love the
there's an Armageddon. There's an Armageddon on DVD and The Rock, and I will never part with those, man. They're sick.
Yeah, I've got those too, and I've often said they should. I don't know how much of a stranglehold Disney have on both those films, but you know they should really go about that. Could be an April Fool's Day. You know
that for that Ben Affleck commentary track alone, it's one of the great things on the internet. Just rediscovers it every couple of years.
Yeah. And so, we can talk about different films. I mean, like the more films we talk about, the more, like, let's say Five Heartbeats.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've ever seen that film. No. Like, that's beginning to become, like, a very well-respected film in the African-American. It's like a Robert Townsend's follow-up to Hollywood. It's so funny because in 1987 Robert Townsend dropped Hollywood Shuffle and then he directed Eddie Murphy Raw, which is like that's like going from like street ball to playing in the Jordan Pippen Rodman Chicago Bulls. And just, you would think like when you have two very much talked about films of that year that he would be a very in-demand director, but he didn't direct his next film, The Five Heartbeats, until 1991, which is to show you how much of a testament that film is. There are people who believe that The Five Heartbeats is a real group.
Yeah.
Which is like they think for some reason the document that people just assume through pop culture osmosis that the Five Heartbeats is actually a real group. So that would be an interesting one for Criterion to drop next.
I do want to talk about Theodore Witch's Love Jones with you, which you actually recommended. And then like just by sheer coincidence, Tracy Letts, who has become kind of like the weird godfather of owning every single film in the Criterion collection, and a huge champion of physical media. He plucked out in his recommendations in almost every one of his picks. He was like, I'm not taking this. I'm just picking it because I already own it. And he just said it was one of the most interesting and unique films that he's ever seen, like a beautiful, like kind of, you could call it a romantic drama about a bunch of young black people in Chicago pursuing artistic backgrounds, having this entire sort of beat poetry scene rendered on screen, like a slice of life that you've never had any experience with. And he talked about how important it was. And it just resonated with me so much because I was sort of the same thing. It's like this is a very unique community, very kind of like intellectual, very kind of like socially progressive group of people. People have come from like semi kind of like upper class, like middle class backgrounds, all sort of getting together. Some of them are doing it tough, but others are like quite comfortable. And it's just this like beautiful slice of life at these people in this like, you know, strange and busy period of each of their lives, like coming to terms with what they want to do with themselves and pursuing dreams in art, you know, whether that's writing novels, whether that's beat poetry, whether that's being a, you know, book editors / eventually photographers, all those sorts of things. And I just, it was a really special and sweet and beautifully constructed movie that like was a slice of black culture that I'd almost never seen before.
Well, yeah, that's, and just going back to what I said, just, you know, a lot of these films just show different facets of black life. And at the time, you know, Love Jones, it was a very different, mature film. I kind of have a love-hate relationship with the film because, I mean, I love the film, but it just made so many people think they were poets. It's like, you have no idea the insane, like, because I actually was a part of that scene. I used to go to the spoken word gatherings and just drop the most bizarre, offensive poetry. I used to do, like, I had one thing called Who Wants to Be a Millionaire by Licking My Balls. It was a breakdown of that. Is, I think that's the least offensive one I could tell you right now.
My God.
And so I had this rep of being just like this crazy comical poet, but most of the poets were just very,
very serious. They would have not appreciated that, your humor.
Very serious, and also the sense, a lot of poets around that time were, a lot of poets were inspired by Love Jones. Now, a lot of poets trying to get laid through their poetry.
Hell yeah!
Like trying to do some some erotic poetry. Like it would be so funny seeing these people, like men and women, going up there and doing this very graphic motif bit about I'm gonna place you up on the bed and then put your legs over your head and then do all and just try to get all rhythmic with it. It actually inspired me to write a poem titled Pussy Pleasing Poem, which is just basically I was making fun of all the poets that were just basically doing all these poems where it is like
there's no subtext in that
stuff. Yeah.
There's no subtext in those poems. There's more just like text. It's more like, I am trying to get laid. I'm going to say something very florid and beautiful and or lurid about what I want to do to you. And here we go. And you know what? Don't hate the player, Craig. You got to hate the game. It's just like...
Yeah, I hate the player and the game.
I hate it. In.
None of this shit worked out for me. Well, kind of, I don't know, but it's just like it was so crazy being a part of, like, it was the Houston poetry scene. It was just, there were so many people just basically, I used to say just like trying to fuck each other through their poetry. Like they'd be like, and there'd be some female poets who would like get through a bad breakup. And just write a poem about a certain poet in the scene, and just like it was so crazy back there at that time, and so all of that, when watching Love Jones again not too long ago, just like it brought me back to that time when just like, we just had black folks doing poetry because Lorenz Tate. Did in a movie, and it just set off this whole spoken word craze, and that led to Deaf Poetry Jam and Saul Williams being like a poetry slam star. He starred in the movie Slam. That's a movie that might, that's another that came out in 98 that could get some Criterion love. So yeah, I mean, a lot of these, the great thing, especially for me, in revisiting a lot of these movies, because like a lot of these movies actually kind of like they, a lot of them hold memories.
Yeah.
Like, remember my mother told me to, this was back when I could, I was pretty handy with VCRs and knowing how to make dubs and whatnot, and just he asked me to tape Cooley High off the TV one night, and like I did it, and it was like she was kind of upset with how I recorded it and shit, like there was all whatever, and like you're the one asked me to. But is that my? That's a whole other situation. But yeah, just Hollywood Shuffle. Like I remember seeing that in the during the winter break of 87 when it came out on Jesus. Video as well. And I remember, like, when it played here in Houston, it actually played at this art house theater, the Greenway 3. This was back when AMC owned the Greenway 3, and then, like, Landmark Theaters eventually owned. But, like, yeah, it was basically considered, since it was a low budget film, that it played in art houses. And, you know, I heard about it, and I want to watch it, and I was just like the whole sneaking in the movie segment, like that's first time I truly remember, like, laughing so hard. I was just like, I think something's wrong with me. Just like, I feel like my hat, because it was just like, it was just making me laugh so hard. I just like, I might pass out or something. I don't know, but, like, yeah, it was. And, you know, just seeing it again on Criterion took me back. I actually interviewed Robert Townsend when it came out and talked to him about how much Hollywood Shuffle has gone on to be very influential in terms of, you know, just filmmakers. Even, like, you know, I don't know if you saw, like, with the Kevin Smith Criterion Closet or the Ben Affleck Closet. They give a shout out to Hollywood Shuffle being a very, you know, because of course it was the famous film where Robert Townsend maxed out credit cards,
yeah,
to finish it and stuff. And so yeah, just like, it just also, you know, bring awareness to just how black filmmakers like Robert Townsend, how they managed to get their film out there. And just, and the same thing with Melvin Van Peebles. Like, if, you know, we, you know, Sweet Sweet Back, of course, went on to be a very influential, very successful blaxploitation movie. And what's interesting about Central Film Set is that not only does it include Sweet Sweet Back, but it also includes Black Ass, which is the movie Mario Van Peebles made about his father and the making of Sweet Sweet Back. So yeah, you got the movie and the biopic in the same package. So,
well, man, look, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me about this, and I love this conversation, and I love hearing your memories, and I love hearing your April Fool's suggestion. That's all killer, no filler. So if Criterion's listening, I love that. Like, just mock up a few, test them out, see how many clicks you get, see what kind of reaction you get. But thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me. It's always fun to talk to you. I hope that the remainder of this silly season, post-turkey season, doesn't drive you too crazy. But I appreciate you very much. I enjoy your stuff very much. And thanks for talking to me.
Oh, you're welcome.